This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, makers of the free Brew Guru mobile app. If you love brewing beer and saving money on beer when you go out, you need Brew Guru in your corner. The app offers a searchable database of homebrew recipes, including popular craft beer clones and hundreds of winning recipes from the National Homebrew Competition. What's more, Brew Guru has a map of money-saving deals at breweries, beer bars, and homebrew shops. Grab the free Brew Guru app for iPhone and Android devices and follow the path to good beer. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 9th, 2018. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about homebrewing. This week, homebrewer Kevin McAvoy shares his experiment blending sake and beer. One might say that's redundant because they're both beer, and you'd be right. And I bet you're popular on Twitter. Anyway, Kevin blended sake moto in with beer wort to create something that was new to Steve and me, at least. Will it be tasty? Stay tuned. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other basic brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing. Find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you'd do us a favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, that'll help new listeners to find us. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. My son Drew has been home from college the past few weeks. We sent him back to UW yesterday. It's the first time that Drew's been home since he turned 21, so I put him to work helping me to do beer stuff. Since he's all legal and stuff, we bottled the next hop sampler experiment. This time it's going to be Crystal, Glacier, and German Huel Melon. And I posted pictures about that experiment on social media thingies, and people are excited about that. We are too. This time I upped the hop amount to 1 ounce in each of those 1 gallon batches because they were moderate alpha acid levels. So that'll be a fun one to sample. That's for a future episode. But while Drew was home, he wanted to brew a beer, so we brewed up a hop stand amber ale, or at least that's what I'm calling it. Maris Otter with a little Crystal, and Perlay at the start of the boil, and Calypso and El Dorado after the boil. We invited Steve Wilkes and his son Chase Holloman over to taste the beer and shoot a video episode about it, and we all liked it. I was hoping for even more juicy hop character, to be honest, and I wonder if the fermentation was a bit warm. The Imperial A38 juice yeast that we used really got with it, and because the room was kind of warm where the beer was, the temperature rose to more than 75 degrees Fahrenheit or 24 C. So, and it may be time for me to get a chilled fermentation chamber. maybe by next summer. The hop aromas blasting out of the airlock smelled great. I mean, you walked into the little bathroom where that fermenter was, and it was just like, wow, this smells awesome. But, you know, I'm assuming that means that those hop aromas were leaving the beer. I'm not blaming the yeast. It just gets a little warm in the house in the summertime. So I need to brew that recipe again in the winter to see if there's a marked difference. Sounds like a tasty experiment. We served that beer on the patio from my Poncho's Keg Cooler from our sponsor, Poncho's Brewing Lab. Poncho's Keg Cooler is a 20-gallon cylindrical insulated cooler that's designed to accommodate a 5-gallon corny keg. Poncho made those because he's not happy dealing with jockey boxes. They're just a pain. And I've used my cooler to serve homebrew to family and friends a few times, and I love it. It doesn't take much ice to keep a keg cool. I put a couple of bags in the cooler on Monday, and I left it on the porch where it's been hot. And it's Wednesday now, and I checked today, and there is still ice in there, keeping the keg cold. So since the keg isn't sitting out in the heat, like when you use a jockey box, your beer doesn't have to go through big temperature swings. And when you're not serving beer out of it, you can convert your Poncho's Keg Cooler into a 20-gallon mash tun. And right now, the Deluxe Poncho's keg cooler comes with a CM Becker's mini regulator and adapters to fit 16-gram, 74-gram paintball and regular CO2 tanks for the same price as the deluxe cooler used to be. And if you use the code BBR at ponchosbrewinglab.com, that's P-A-N-C-H-O-S brewinglab.com, you can get 15% off any cooler. So head on over to ponchosbrewinglab.com and pick up your own Poncho's keg cooler. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Matt from Rochester, New York asks, a colleague of mine grows Cascade hops in her yard but does not brew. She will be gifting me the hops again this year in exchange for some finished beer. Sounds like a good trait. Last year, I used these hops wet in a continuous hopping during a 60-minute boil. I then dry hopped with the beer at pitching time because I did not have a method to preserve the hops. The beer came out very vegetal and not very palatable to my taste, Matt says. This year I'm going to use fewer hops and more substantial grain bill in the wet-hopped beer, but I want to figure out a method of preserving the hops. Drying is not really an option, as I neither have the space, time, or equipment. I heard you discuss hop teas on the podcast before, and I was wondering if I could make a wet hop tea, then freeze it in gallon milk jugs. I tend to chill my wort with ice anyway, so what if that ice was hop-flavored? Do you think this will work, or am I destined for a January brewing disaster episode? Well, Matt, short answer, I don't know. There's a lot to digest there. I've had success drying homebrew hops pretty easily in either in a food dehydrator, if you want to go high-tech, or with just simply spreading the hops out on window screens and, you know, that have been propped up between chairs and letting them sit in a spare bedroom with the air conditioner off for a few days. And that seemed to work really well. And then I vacuum sealed them in little bags and then put them in the freezer after that. I realize that you may not have either of those opportunities, either the equipment or the space to lay out all those hops. But I don't know about the frozen hop tea approach. It seems like that would take up a lot of space in the freezer, though, speaking of taking up space. But, you know, what the heck? I don't know. It's worth a try, I guess. I don't know what would happen. I was thinking back, and I looked through the archives, and you remember in March – on the March 1st, 2012 episode here on Basic Brewing Radio, our buddy Bob Stimsky came on to talk about making hopped vodka back then. So I don't know if that's something that you may have better luck with or whether you can, you know, make something more concentrated using the spirits instead of the water. I did a little Googling on even freezing wet hops instead of drying them, and the brewers on the boards didn't seem impressed with the quality of the hops storing them that way. So I'm kind of stumped for good information. So I'm asking anybody out there who, you know, you've either grown your own hops or you've dealt with wet hops that somebody else has given you. Do you have any advice for Matt? What is the best way to deal with wet hops without drying them and still be able to use them, or at least their essence, later on down the line? So shoot me a note and let me know if you have experience or ideas along these lines. Let's talk for a minute about our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. I know summertime is not the peak time for brewing. It's too dang hot. You got all kinds of other things to do with family vacations and the like. But you know school's about to start back up and the temperatures are eventually going to come down. Probably. It's time to think about upgrading into an electric system from High Gravity with a Warthog controller. The one thing that my son said about brewing our batch of beer was that he didn't expect it to be so easy. You know, these kids today don't know how easy they got it. In my day, you had to heat your strike water over the propane and pour it into another vessel and then move it back. And then sometimes you missed your mass temperature and you said, well, it's probably going to be all right anyway. And then you tried to start your boil, but the wind came up and blew away most of the heat. And you said, it's okay. It's probably a strong enough boil. The old days. Friends, I tell you, with an electric system from High Gravity, those days are gone. The mash is rock steady, the boil is controllable, and you get to enjoy the quiet of the birds while you brew. High Gravity has a variety of systems and controllers all the way from 5 gallons to 2 barrels. You can check them all out at highgravitybrew.com. And if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric brewery purchase. That's from our friends at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Take the pain out of propane at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, Kevin, or homebrewer Kevin McAvoy sent us something new, a beverage bridging rice and barley together in something more exotic than just an American lager. Kevin McAvoy, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me, James.
It's getting harder and harder to do, but you have done it. It's harder and harder to send us a beverage or to expose us to a beverage that we haven't either heard of or tasted before. But this time you've done it. I don't remember ever having or hearing of a beer-sake hybrid. Where did you get this idea?
Yeah, I think it came from a few different places. I've had a few beers that claim to be sake beers, but I think most of the time it means they've just used a sake yeast. I don't know exactly where the idea came from. I got into Japanese food and culture and sake in particular. And my wife and I have made a few trips to Japan. And the last time we were there, I was able to pick up some koji, which is a key ingredient in sake. And I thought, what am I going to do with this? And I figured, well, let's make a real sake beer, not just with sake yeast, but actually kind of making the sake separately or starting it out. And then.
So do you have experience in making pure sake itself?
I do not. I read about it and I considered it when I was first getting into sake, and it seemed really not difficult, but long and drawn out. And like you'd have to be able to, you know, brewing you can kind of bang out in a half a day if you find time. But sake is like you got to keep dedicating time to it throughout the fermentation. So it seems like you'd have to have a lot more free time than just brewing beer.
Yeah, I interviewed Bob Taylor, a homebrewer from Alaska, who sent me some homebrewed sake back in 2007. And if you listen to that episode from November 29th of 2007, if you go back in the archives, Bob goes through the process. And, you know, I was really curious to try it. But then once I heard how how difficult it was, or at least how much effort it took, I was kind of deterred afterwards.
Yeah, maybe a project for me for retirement, which is a long ways off. So,
well, you said before we started recording that you heard your homebrew shop owner there in Boulder on mm-hmm. In the Club Night podcast, and he makes sake, and he shared some there at Club Night, and you have a good teacher there potentially because what he had was really tasty.
I'm gonna have to hook up with him. He doesn't seem to be in the shop himself as much these days, but next time I see him, I'll chat him up about it.
Well, he's elbows deep in a bucket of rice.
There you go.
That was another thing. I think Bob said, you know, he had to, you know, wash your hands up to your elbows and get in there and just, you know, stir things around a bit, you know.
I think that's the other thing as a brewer. I think the sake, at least it made me a little nervous because you definitely feel like you might be contaminating things just by nature of the process of sake. And I actually watched a documentary or two about brewing sake, and the guys are definitely just, I mean, I'm sure they're taking precautions, but they're definitely just sticking their hands in there, and it's all, you know, open fermentations and stuff like that. So
was it the documentary where they live at the brewery?
Yeah. The one that's on Netflix. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, there's a whole culture.
Yeah,
in more ways than one. But yeah, there's a human culture, and then there's the culture that lives on the rice. So let's get started. How, first of all, people call sake rice wine.
Yeah.
But it's not really wine. It's beer.
Yeah. I think by most definitions of what beer is, it should really be considered a beer. Or, if you consider chicha or any of those weird corn, South American corn or beverages, beers, then sake should definitely also be considered a beer because it's made fermented beverage from grain. So.
Mm-hmm. And there's some conversion that happens to turn starches into sugars, and so you know there are parts of the process that at least in theory should be sort of familiar with beer brewers.
Yeah, I think the main difference is that since rice is not a grain that can be malted, you need something else to help those conversions happen. And that's where the koji comes in. But otherwise it's a really similar process. You're getting those starches converted to sugars and you're letting the yeast do its job.
Now I learned something at HomebrewCon, as I always do, in talking with gluten-free homebrewers out there. You can actually get malted rice.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, but the problem is that the gelatinization temperature of rice is higher than the temperature that kills the enzymes that you get from malting. So you have to add enzymes in anyway.
Oh, wow. That's good. And I wonder, is malted rice, is it like brown rice, like whole grain? Because...
I don't know. That's a good question. These are all questions that I'll try to store away. I've got an interview lined up with those guys.
Okay, cool.
From I think it's Zero Tolerance. I think is the name of the homebrew club.
Yeah. Now that you say that, I remember hearing.
Yeah. So no spoilers for another show. But it's an interesting process. The things that they do. I'm really looking forward to talking to them.
Cool. Yeah, I'd be curious to hear about that too.
But traditionally, talk about koji and what it is and what it does and how you use it.
Right. So I'm definitely no expert, but my understanding is that koji is it's like a fungus, or they refer to it as a mold, and it has some Latin name, asper. I don't know how to pronounce Latin scientific names, but asper gile or rize or something like that. And they propagate it on rice. So when you buy, like I bought the package of koji, it's actually called koji rice. So it looks like you're buying a package of funny looking rice, really.
Huh.
So the principle of getting the sake started is it has all these steps and each step has a name. You are basically steaming the rice and then inoculating it with the koji rice. So you just kind of mix the raw koji rice in there, and then the fungus is activated and goes to work on those starches. And after a couple of days, you're just left with this kind of liquidy mush.
Hmm.
So it really, it's kind of remarkable to watch it work. It's, you know, like when the first few times you brew beer and you're just like so fascinated by watching the fermentation happen, it was kind of a similar feeling watching this koji just like make literal mush out of the rice.
I'm assuming what's happening there is starches are being turned into sugars.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it kind of a drier texture when you start, or is it sticky, or what's it like?
The rice itself, or
yeah, the mixture of the steamed rice and the koji rice together.
Well, when you steam rice, I'd never actually steamed rice before. You usually boil rice, but steamed rice comes out not as wet, for lack of a better word, as boiled rice. It's quite sticky, and it doesn't feel, you can't get the individual grains apart. But there's a reason behind steaming rather than boiling, and I don't remember it off the top of my head, but they specifically tell you to steam it. And then when you mix the koji in, it's really relatively solid. It's cooked rice, but it's not, you don't have any liquid in there.
And what kind of rice do you have to use? I'm assuming minute rice would be right out, right?
You don't want anything like pre-cooked or anything like that. I think you can really use any type of rice, but the Japanese are really particular about their rice. And actually, I think by law, there's no, by Japanese law, there's no rice exported out of Japan. So if you get rice here, you're buying probably California rice, and it's like a medium grain. They call it sushi rice or Japanese style, or there's all these different names for it. But if you go to any kind of specialty store or Asian grocery or whatever, they'll have Japanese rice. But I think you could use any. I mean, you wouldn't want to use like a basmati or a jasmine rice or something like that, because those have their own fragrance to them. But kind of any plain medium or short grain rice is probably fine.
There's a lot of rice grown in Arkansas as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Plug for my home state. Yeah. Southeast Arkansas is flat. It's down there in the Delta. Yeah. And so it's real good for flooding. And nice. Real good for mosquito production as well. So, where did you get your instructions? I mean, if you hadn't been talking to your experienced homebrew shop owner, where did you get your tips?
The good old interwebs. I mostly was going off an article on Brew Your Own. I'm opening it up right now. I guess they don't have a date on it, but it's a pretty nice and thorough article, which takes you through all the steps and gives you some kind of, goes over some kind of common misconceptions and how to get the ingredients if you can't find them and that kind of thing. But also, I think Michael Tonsmeyer had a little article somewhere that I like stole a little bit from, and so I read a bunch of stuff. I mostly followed the Brew Your Own article and then just kind of substituted a few other tips here and there as they seemed to fit me.
And you didn't go all the way with the sake making process, right? You stopped at a certain point.
That's right. So there's, I mean, I'm just going over the article right now. There's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 main like stages of the fermentation itself. So I just did the first one, which they call the moto, which is really what I described. So you steam the rice, you add the koji to the rice and put that in your fermenter. And after a couple days, it's just like this liquidy mess. And I think even part of the I even stopped the moto, that first step, short, because you would still pitch the yeast. And then essentially you're making a big starter at that point, and you would, from there, you would keep adding more rice and more koji and more water in specific amounts and at specific days and stuff like that.
That's where your arms go up to the elbows.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't get into that really fun part. And in the you'll remember from that documentary that it's like they have specific, I think it's all done in like cedar vats, and I don't know, it's really fascinating how they do it, but. Yeah, I really just stopped it. I just got that kind of that liquid out of the moto to add into my beer.
Yeah, and we'll play a tasting that Steve and I did here in a few minutes. But we assumed that you had made sake and then made beer and then blended them together after fermentation, but you didn't.
No, and actually, before I did it, that's one thing I debated for a long time what tack to take with this. I thought about mashing the whole thing in with my brew day mash, but I don't know. You know, I read a lot about how the koji contributes flavor, and I've just figured, well, if I added that into the mash and then boil it, I probably am just going to be killing off that kind of, and it's a delicate flavor, you know. So I thought, well, I'd probably be killing off whatever flavors I'm getting in the boil. And then I also thought about that, like taking the sake, you know, all the way to the end, which would have been fun. But like I said, that seemed really time consuming. And I worried, you know, well, my first time making sake, if I screw it all up, then it's going to also screw this beer up. So I sort of came to this middle ground that way.
Good old American compromise.
That's right. The Japanese might be appalled by what I did. Who knows?
So you had to make the moto a few days before you brewed the beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was was more effort than just making a beer. So you get some credit for that.
It was a little more effort, but to be fair, the moto was pretty simple. I don't think it took me more than an hour to do, because the steaming rice is pretty quick, 20, 30 minutes. And then just getting it all into the fermenter, making sure my fermenter was sanitized and getting it all in there. And then, probably even less than an hour.
So how did you bring beer into the equation?
So, that's another thing I debated on, was a style of beer to make. But I kind of figured just like a nice pale lager would let the flavors shine the most. And plus, that's the preferred beer in Japan, and to eat with Japanese food are pale lagers. I think actually, to me, to my palate, the Japanese make some of the best commercial pale lagers out there. I love me a nice Sapporo or Asahi when the when the mood calls. So I just kind of did a simple, let's see, what was my recipe? Just like four, I've been doing 2.5 gallon batches lately, inspired by you, James, actually, some small batch, stovetop batches.
Oh, there you go.
And, so I did 4 pounds of Pilsner malt, 3 ounces of Millennoiden to try and boost up the body, because I read that sake yeast can attenuate a whole lot. And then that was it in my mash. I used some Sirachi Ace hops, which I'd never used before. But I still, I've only done a handful of batches here on my stovetop so far, so I still haven't got my hop utilization dialed in yet. I would have hoped for a little more hop aroma and flavor. I just used 5 grams in the boil and 4 grams at flame out, but maybe next time I'll up that a little bit. I've heard so much about these unique flavors and aromas of Sirachi Ace, but I didn't get a ton out of it, to be honest.
Well, no spoilers on our tasting yet.
Okay. So on brew day, I just went about my brew day as usual and cooled down my wort. And at that point was when I just added that to, I think what I did was I had the moto going in a fermenter, but I think I poured it out into a funnel with a strainer just to get all the solids out the rice was that was being left behind. So I got all the liquid, which was quite a bit from the moto. And then I pitched the yeast, and I pitched the White Lab sake yeast, WLP 705.
And no starter with that?
No starter. I don't think I've never made a starter, to be honest, but especially with the small batch, 2.5 gallons, I wasn't too worried about it.
Yeah, that you should be plenty safe with that.
Yeah.
So what was your starting gravity?
I'm going to confess a dirty secret that with all that going on, with trying to make sure the moto got in there safely and everything, I totally forgot to take a reading for my OG. Beersmith calculated, gave me an estimated OG of 1054.
Interesting.
My little stovetop system has seemed to be pretty efficient so far, so... and pretty consistent, so I'm guessing that I got about that.
So 1054, including the rice?
Including the rice, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So how did the fermentation go?
Yeah, it went great. It was vigorous, and I started off at, let's see, my fermentation was, I did it like a 58, so it's kind of like a lager-ish. High lager temps, low ale temps, 58 Fahrenheit. And then I just kind of raised it up as time went on. I did about a 2 week. I just generally do give all my beers about 2 weeks just to be certain everything's finished out. And boy, that sake yeast really attenuated. My final gravity was 1.004.
Wow.
Yeah. So, which gave me an ABV of like 6.5%.
Okay. Well, anything else before we go into the tasting with Steve and me?
Not that I can think of.
I think we covered it. Now, the question is, I got together finally, and I apologize. I've had this beer in my fridge for months, and it seems like every time Steve and I are getting together, something happens. Or one time I was like, okay, I'm going to shoot videos at Steve's house this weekend. I'm going to take the beer over there, and I go over to Steve's house, and I'd forgotten the beer. So, and then Steve, there was an illness, which we won't go into, and that derailed things for a while. So we finally got together recently in the office of stevesbrewshop.com to taste Kevin's Sake Beer Hybrid. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James. It's a pleasure to be back on the air.
And here we are sitting in your office at stevesbrewshop.com.
.com. Yep. It's a nice, what is it? Today's Wednesday.
Yes.
If it's Wednesday, I'm launching a new kit.
Hey, what do you got?
I'm launching a farmhouse ale. I'm calling it Panther Martin. That's a fishing lure. No affiliation. Panther Knob Farmhouse Ale.
Where does the name originate?
Panther Knob is a mountain down by St. Paul, Arkansas. It's about a 2,300-foot mountain. It's just slightly less elevation than Mount Magazine.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I've never heard of it.
Well,
Mount Magazine is the highest point in the state of Arkansas.
Well, depends if you've seen Joe that hangs out in here at the comic book shop on a Friday evening. That's a high point.
He is the highest Arkansan in
right.
Arkansas. Someone once launched they do hang gliders off Mount Magazine, which is like in the center of the state. And somebody one time got into or onto a hang glider, jumped off Mount Magazine, and wound up way in Missouri.
I believe it.
Yeah, well, there you go. Panther Knob, not to be confused with Bald Knob.
No, that's another beer coming down the pike.
This is your knob series. Okay. Okay. What we have here is... Just two sips has made us happy.
That's right.
What we have here is a hybrid. All we know is it's a hybrid between beer and sake. And I've had it for a while. And apologies to Kevin for finally getting around to this. But I think it was worth the wait. This was actually quite a tasty beverage.
Yeah, I think it's really good. So we don't have a lot of details about, other than it's an ale and a sake blended. But we... Just knock my glasses off. That's really good beer. So we don't know much about it other than that.
No.
Well, I can say that it's a very pleasant drink. It's nice to drink. I definitely feel like I can taste the sake in it. I get kind of a earthy, grassy, rice note. If you've ever kind of sipped the water when you make rice, which oddly enough I've done, it kind of reminds me of that. And then there's just a nice base ale with it.
But at the same time, it's not starchy, you know,
no.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear. It was effervescent when I poured it, and the head appeared and disappeared quite quickly. So there's not much head retention there. But the notes that I tasted and smelled at first were very Hefeweizen-like. Mm-hmm. So kind of just a little bit of, teeny bit of banana. Less banana than a Hefeweizen, but clove, to me, was very strong. And then the more I tasted, the more I got that kind of background. Like you're saying, there's kind of a, not starchy, but, you know, ricey. You know, it's kind of, it's. If I'm not talking myself into it, it does seem to have a nice well-made sake character to it as well.
Yeah, when I first tasted it, I thought it was reminiscent of corn. Now, not DMS, but, you know, like, I don't know, you've read it, corn nut? Remember corn nuts?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, corn nut. It kind of had that kind of roasted corn flavor. But then as I thought about it a little bit more, I realized that was really the rice giving it that flavor. This beer is definitely not about hops, though. I think it's well-balanced. It's got enough hop in it that it's not sweet. And it's very drinkable, actually.
The more it warms up, the more I'm getting kind of a floral character, like almost like a rose flavor.
Would you say it's mighty like a rose?
Since this is sake, maybe it's Tokyo Rose. I don't know.
Well, it could be.
But it's, do you get that? Do you get a floral character? Can I talk you into that?
Yeah, sure. I can be talked into that. How much money you got?
I'm about to buy ingredients from you. I'm a customer.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. It's. What do you think it tastes like? I'll go with that. No, it's, yeah, I think it's floral. It's herbal. It's rice-like. You know, it's grain-like. Just enough hops to keep things in balance. That's all I know.
It reminds me of a well-crafted mead. You know, if you handed me this and said, this is a mead that I whipped up, you know, with a little bit of this and a little bit of that, I would say, oh, well, good job. That seems kind of like in the character of something that you would do.
It is warming, so I don't know what the ABV is on it, but I've now drank most of my half bottle. Mm-hmm. So say we'll call it 6 ounces, and I've drank say 5 of them, and I can definitely feel a little warmth. Not a buzz yet, but definitely warming. So I'm assuming that the alcohol content is relatively high. You know, I'm going to put it at 7% maybe 8%. I don't have a clue other than how it kind of is warming my chest, and it's relatively thin, meaning it's not a big malty beer that's got a lot of alcohol.
Right.
So you can tell that it's, I'll call it a fortified beer.
Mm.
You know, so it's been fortified with rice wine to give it the alcohol content, and the rice wine, I'm assuming, is relatively thin in terms of the palate.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have is a relatively strong beer that drinks much lighter than it is.
And at this point, I would call it a still beverage. You know, yeah. It was carbonated in the beginning, but that carbonation has dissipated and escaped at this point. And you can swirl it up, and it's not bubbling anymore. So, it's bubbling a little bit, but it's definitely not fizzy at this point.
No, I mean, I get a little bit of carbonation when I drink it, but there's no head at all. And I'm wondering why. I'm wondering if there's something in the sake that would cause it to kill the head. I don't know much about rice. I've never worked with rice much at all. So I don't know if it has oils in it that maybe would kill the head. I just don't know. But otherwise, you know, I think to do this again, I would probably, you know, if I were doing this, I would try to get some head into it. I don't know if brewing a beer that maybe had some carapils or a fair amount of wheat or a little of both maybe might help the head retention and get it back into that neighborhood. But other than that, I don't really have a criticism of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't ding it for anything, especially because it is an animal unto itself. I don't know. I've certainly never had something like this, and I don't know of any. I've never heard of any commercial example of it. So, I think it's a winner. I think it's tasty.
Yeah, I'd definitely, you know, pay a dollar for that. I think it's good.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, James.
So, Kevin, we liked it.
All right. Good news.
Yeah, it is. It's always good and fun to taste something that somebody has sent us and actually, you know, feel good about it and like it. We rarely get stinkers. So knock wood, knock for Micah here in the studio. But we were under the impression that you blended two beers to or blended a beer and a sake together. But this hybrid was really interesting and fun and something completely new. What was your reaction when you first tasted it?
Yeah, I think I had pretty similar reactions to you guys. I mean, I was really happy with the way it came out. Like I said, I think I had two main things that I'd like to change in the future. One seems pretty easy. I'd just like to get a little more aroma and flavor out of this Sriracha Ace hops. Although now that I know how the beer itself tastes, I just wonder how those would play.
There were so many unique characteristics that I would hate to stomp on that, you know?
Right. I don't want to get any, it's not meant to be a bitter beer, and it wasn't really a sweet beer either. So you don't need a ton of, bitterness to balance it out or anything. But I don't know. I'd just be curious to play around with that, I guess. That's a hop I just don't have experience with otherwise.
Well, sure.
And my other main thing I'd like to change, which is what you guys mentioned about how the head just dissipates so quickly, and then you're left with, I mean, it's still slightly effervescent towards the end of the beer, but you know, you'd like to still see those bubbles rising and feel a nice, have that contributing to the mouthfeel and everything. So, but that's a problem that I don't really know how to address, because I don't know why that happened. I've never really had that problem with any of my other beers before. So,
yeah, I think maybe if you, I was going to say if you mashed a little higher, with your beer, but I don't know what the koji's doing with, because the koji is still active, right? I mean, you didn't,
right.
It's not sanitized. So if it's able to turn the starches from rice into sugar, you know, it might be able to turn, you know, a lot of the quote unquote non-fermentable sugars, you know, that we usually get from crystal malt or something like that in beer. Mm-hmm. It might be able to take care of those as well.
Right. Which I guess could be a reason why my final gravity was able to get down pretty low too.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, it seemed to us that it was, you know, we split that beer between us. It was in a 12-ounce bottle. Uh-huh. And by the end of it, you know, we were quite happy. And I'm just wondering if it was higher in alcohol than you thought.
It could have been. I mean, without knowing the actual OG, it's very possible.
But we were getting, you know, kind of this kind of spice, you know, the clovey character was very strong for me. There was a little bit of, banana in there, which, and you said you lagered it, right? So,
yeah.
So you wouldn't think that, you know, that kind of character would come out of a cold fermented beer. I don't know.
Although that could be a product of that sake yeast as well. I mean, if you, I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things you get when you drink sake, is a lot of yeast-driven characteristic, or at least that's what I'm told, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the character comes from yeast. And I don't know about those, like, spicy phenol things, but there's definitely a lot of esters going on in sake. So,
And this was very subtle. I mean, you know, like I said in the recording at the end, as the beer warmed up, you know, we got floral and, you know, like rose, right, characteristics. And I don't know, right, if you got all that stuff too.
Yeah, definitely some floral, which is also a definite character of sake. And I always get like apple and pear out of sake, which I can kind of get towards the end of this beer as well.
So I assume your experience with sake is you know, a lot more deep than mine is. Could you get sake character out of the beverage? I mean, you know, we were saying that we thought we got sake character, but when you drank it, could you actually, does it taste like sake?
I mean, in a way, although you never know what you're talking yourself into, I guess. But I mean, I could definitely pick out some sake kind of characteristics. It'd be interesting I guess I'd be interested for somebody who knows sake but doesn't know what this beer is to taste it and then see what they get out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That's I should have done that to Steve, but but sometimes I was just so excited to try the experiment that I told him, and so, and sometimes it's not fair and not fun to be on the spot with a microphone in front of your face tasting something, right. And it's something that you would think would be obvious, and then you don't get it, and then you look like an idiot. So
yeah. But I'd say overall, yeah, I mean, it definitely tasted different than just a regular pale lager. I mean, that's for sure. So I definitely have it on my list of things to try, is to keep experimenting with this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so. I think definitely it was a success, and I would keep us posted on new things that you try with it. If you were to give any advice to anybody trying this for the first time, was there anything, that surprised you, even though you read, instructions on how to do it? Or is there anything that popped out that you wish you had known going into it?
Not that I can think of. Just don't forget to take your gravity reading.
Yeah.
Don't get too excited. That's, I think I was just too excited. It just seems so like wild to me.
So. you can be forgiven. I forget to take gravity readings on normal brew days. So
yeah, I'm sort of an absent-minded person in the first place. That's not terribly surprising.
Well, Kevin, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate your adventurous spirit, and I appreciate your sending us the beer.
Yeah, I appreciate you tasting it and your honest feedback, and thanks for having me on. It's pretty fun.
Well, thanks again to Kevin. That was really a delicious beverage, and I say it's worth exploring more. Always fun to learn about new things, and I hope Kevin will keep us posted. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check out that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site and get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check out all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Also, take a look at our silicone pints. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.